Saddam Hussein was 100% great. Did not have that external garb that you might have expected of Gdolei Israel. Far from it. Clean shaven, gray suits, trimmed. This is who he was. And he never put on a show for anyone. In the late 60s, early 70s, when he contemplated Aliyah, eventually did come in 1971 to Yeshiva Har Etzion, he was offered various positions in Eretz Israel. As far as I know, he was offered a position in Yeshiva HaKotel, to be Rosh Yeshiva. He was also offered by a Haredi Yeshiva, Itri, in Beit Safafa, right beyond Talbiot, by a Rav Elephant. They offered him, they knew Rav Elman knew exactly where Rav Elephant was and what and his worth, and really wanted him to be a Ram in the Yeshiva, give a shiur in the Yeshiva. But there were two strings attached. We'd have to go with a beard and a kapota. Anybody knowing anything about Rav Elephant, they knew that that job would be turned down immediately. But he ultimately accepted an invitation to join, and I mean join, Rav Yehuda Amital Zevet Tzadik Livracha. We'll talk about this shortly. Just a few months ago, in the journal called Tradition, which is the quarterly that comes out from the Rabbinical Council of America from the beginning of 1960, if I'm not mistaken. So they actually had an entire issue dedicated to the thought of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And normally you have to be a member of the RCA to get into it. They opened that up to the public for a month, until Shloshim. So if you go into the site of the RCA, you can see any of these articles. The first article is called An Introductory Biographical Sketch of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Just a few months ago. And I'm going to open with this first paragraph. It's written by a Shlomo Zukier and Sean Carmi. Sean Carmi, I happen to know from Yeshiva. He's one of the, he's the editor now of Tradition, and he's a professor at the Yeshiva University in Jewish Philosophy. First things first, I'm quoting. The words of the Mishnah, Talmud Torah is equivalent to all of the commandments. We say it every morning, Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Stand at the center of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's thinking. Torah study is the noblest of pursuits, an overriding commandment, and the royal pathway to the knowledge of God. The primary arena of Torah study for Rav Lichtenstein, as for the mainstream of Jewish thought, is the study of legal texts, Talmud, its commentators, and codifiers. And when Rav Lichtenstein extols Talmud to study, he has particularly in mind the Talmud study pursued in the Eastern European tradition, as developed in the past century under the flag of the Brisker School. To ignore or minimize the emphasis on Torah study and on Talmud in Rav Lichtenstein's thought, just because he has championed broad universal concerns and advocated the study of liberal arts as a vehicle to religious wholeness is a distortion of his teaching to the point of making it unrecognizable. Rav Aaron was into Limud Torah. That's what he did. That's what he did best. And he did it to the utmost. The only mushlam, perfection in the world, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Human beings can only strive for perfection. And this thought, in one particular nuance, I heard from the Rav explaining the view of the Vilna Gaon, why in Kaddish, unlike the popular custom of saying 10 expressions of Shevach, of Yitgadel, Yitgadesh, and then Yiporev, Yitabach, Yiporev, Yitromek, Nasei, Tadar, Yitalev, Talal, the Gro, the Vilna Gaon, deleted the last one, V'Yitalal. What's wrong with V'Yitalal? Because he said 10, why do we have 10? Why don't I have a million? 10 is a symbol of perfection of Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's Aseret HaDibrot. And human beings can only achieve 9. We can strive for 10, but we never make it to 10. And the Rav explained that's why in Rosh Hashanah in Musaf, while we have 10 items on the agenda in the Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot, 10 citations from Tanakh, 3 from Torah, 3 from Tehillim, 3 from Nevi'im, and then 1 again from Torah. 10 citations, because Tanakh is Torah, Torah is perfect. We can use the word 10. There are only 9 brachot in the Shmoneh Esrei of Musaf, where we have 10 items on the agenda of the Musaf. And that causes a triple-edged machloket, how to engineer the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. We adopt the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, where we bind together the bracha of Kedushat Hayom, the Korban of the day, like in any Musaf of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbat, with the bracha of Malchiyot. And that's why it has a double ending. O Chata Hashem, Melech al Kol Haaretz, Mikadesh Yisrael, V'yom HaZikor. So, Rav said, if you have 10 items in the agenda, have 10 brachot? No. You have 9 brachot. And to think that there could be an argument how to get to the, how to arrive at the 9, because it's important that we don't have 10. Human beings cannot express 10. The Brod, the Dunder Goyim, took it to a different plateau with Kaddish. You can strive for perfection. I think Rav Lichtenstein's personal efforts in Talmud Torah, it was as close to Mushlam as possible. Because Talmud Torah requires various ingredients if you want to get to perfection. Keen intellect, tremendous memory, incisive ability to decipher hidden messages, analytical skills, even oratorical skills, but perhaps first and foremost, the discipline to sit and study. We call Hatmada, or the Matmid. Remember, the Rav once advised us to read the poem of Bialik, HaMatmid, if you want to get a taste of the atmosphere of the yeshiva in the Lashon. Because Bialik was a student in the Lashon, as we know. He writes a poem about the Hatmada, the diligence of learning. No one in the Beit Midrash in Yeshivat Har Etzion after 71 or before 71 at YU would just walk over to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein in the Beis Medrash to have a schmooze, to have a chat. You weighed your words carefully, you trembled before you approached the table, and you really thought it was important enough to disturb him from his learning. Those were the calculations that you made. Is this important enough? Maybe I'll catch him in the dining room between bites, chop a word, get a word in, in the Beit Midrash. And he was so diligent all the years, until the end, when he did suffer from neurological disorders the last few years, and it inhibited him, his walking, his speech. But he was to be seen, schlepped into the Beis Medrash, almost till the very, very end. Because that's where he was at home. In spite of the fact that at a sicha in the yeshiva, he would quote liberally from his vast knowledge of literature and philosophy and sciences, accurate quotes, names of personality. Remember back in 72, when I was in yeshiva, and I was the second year of the chutznik, and it was the first year they only had 4 guys, we were already a group of 19. All yeshiva had 150 boys. And a little sigil sicha, and you have to realize to the Israeli graduate of yeshiva high school, he was so strange. They never saw anything like this in their lives. And Rav Aaron, using his highfalutin academic Hebrew, which some of them was also strange. He quoted the author John Milton, and one of the Israelis taps me on the shoulder. He says, "Milton, is he from the Rishonim or the Agronim?" And I meant it. So afterwards, the joke in the yeshiva was that Rabbeinu Milton. You know, many times people who had a schut of being a Talmud of the Rav, Zman of the Rav, are so introduced, learned by the Rav, Talmud of the Rav. Unfortunately, sometimes we're a little bit loose with the phrase Talmud Muvhak of the Rav. What does Talmud Muvhak mean? means the choice and principal student of a great teacher. Who is a Talmud Muvah? So the Rav taught thousands of people. There was this outer orbit of Balabatim who heard Shirim, even a larger orbit now that are reading his material. But if you close the circle and get to those who heard him once a week, those who heard him three times a week at the regular shir, and then that group was 100 faces, some were there in their first year in the shir, some were there in their 20th year in the shir, who's the Talmud Muvak? So remember, the Rav once explained that there's a difference between a Talmud Muvak and a Rav Muvak. Rav Muvak is defined in Halakha as the teacher who taught you Rov Chokhmatcha, the majority of your wisdom. And the Rav said, this is not a quantitative value. It's not that by this Rebbe you learn three Gemaras, and by this Rebbe you learn one Gemara, so the first one is the Rav Muvak. It doesn't work like that. Because today, in schools, every year you have somebody else. So every year your 7th grade Rebbe becomes the Rav Muvak over the 6th grade Rebbe, and the 12th grade Rebbe over the 11th grade Rebbe. And you get to a Yeshiva Gevoa, and some of the Yeshivot don't even have Shiur, or you don't have to go to Shiur. And some place can even point out that most of the people study the Torah through Svarim today. So nobody has a Rav Muvak any longer. The Rav said, Rav Muvak you certainly do have, but it has nothing to do with the quantitative value of how much Torah you study by this one as opposed to the other. It's a qualitative value. It has to do with who impressed your religious personality. The person who had ultimate influence, impact on the development of your religious personality becomes your Rav Muvak. And to that extent, said the Rav, many, many people can have the same person as their Rav Muvak. But the Rav himself might just have a handful of Talmidim Muvhakim in plural, 3, 4, 5. And from that 3, 4, 5, you most probably could put your finger on number one, the Talmud Muvhak. So I can tell you that I have been erroneously introduced sometimes as a Talmud Muvhak. And I get up and my first line after such an introduction is a line of protest. Do not cheapen the phrase Talmud Muvhak. Talmud? Yes. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Talmud Muvhak? So the Rav taught Torah at Yeshiva University for 45 years. So there were quite a few Talmidim. So I think there's a somewhat of a consensus of every decade who was the leading Talmud. So Rav had certain leading Talmidim. No doubt, Rav Herschel Shechter, the Rosh Kollel of NYU, is a Talmud Muvak, one of the inner core. There's no question about that. My humble opinion, and it's shared by many, is the one Talmud Muvak was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And the reason is, not only because he had a schut marrying into the family, he married Rav's daughter, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein. Not only, that was a result, not a was the end product already. But because the Rav was so multifaceted. 22 years ago, many people eulogized the Rav. Many people eulogized the Rav. And there was even a book printed, Memories of a Giant. A fellow put out a sefer, collected the various espadim. Some were maspid a little better, some a little lots of better. One thing is clear. The Rav was such an unbelievable, outstanding personality that normally you say in math, the whole equals the sum of the parts. But it was greater than the sum of the parts. But in this case, the sum, in terms of the Rav for sure, all of the parts, all of the spectrum, didn't add up to what he was. He was greater. He was greater than the sum of the parts.
Who was the son of what he
mentioned?
No, the son of Mary.
I'm talking about the son-in-law of Rav Aaron of the Rav. So when the Rav was nifta in 1993, so there was a towering hesped that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, his brother, gave at the Shiva, at the Levaya, which was on Pesach. And Chochem Bafanov, certainly one can deliver such a hesped. Most of this Vedim came after Yom Tov. The large three were on the Shloshim. Rabbi Twersky, Zechariah the Brochot, Rav's other son-in-law, Rav's son, Chaim Soloveitchik, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I'm sorry, Dr. Norman Lamb. Dr. Norman Lamb, president then of Yeshiva University. Dr. Lamb's hesped was outstanding. It's in print in various places. They're absolutely outstanding. Why? Because many of the maspidim, many of those who eulogized, focused on a particular facet of the world. But very few were able to really paint a wide-angle picture and also to take it to some level of depth and really begin to appreciate the totality of who he was. I read many, many of the hespedim that were delivered for the Rav, and I believe the two most outstanding, they were not the same, most outstanding, first in English, second in Hebrew, first was Rabbi Lamb, second was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. When Rav Aaron came back from Boston after the Shiva, there was a hesped at the Yeshurun Shul down the block. People were standing on King George Street, couldn't get in. And they set up a microphone, you know, loudspeaker systems on King George Street. He spoke for an hour and a half. It's in print in a OU publication called Masorah, Volume 10, in its original Hebrew. I think, as great as I always thought of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, after that hesped, he just moved up a notch in being such a great gadol. That hesped was just so fabulous and so perfect in terms of understanding. You see why Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is really almost the unchallenged Talmud Mufak of the Rav. If you take a look at this page that I printed now, from Pirkei Avot, Moshe Kibel to Avi Sinai, Umsarani Yeshua, the Yeshua is king. So Moshe Rabbeinu, we know who he is, and we know who Yeshua is, from the Chumash, and from Sefer Yeshua, of course. Who are the Skenim? Anonymous. Skenim the Nevi'im. Who are the Nevi'im? Anonymous. Nevi'im is Sa'u'ah L'Anshei Knesset Ha'Gdola. Anonymous.
Thank you very much.
Anonymous. Yeshua is not anonymous. There's something about the personality of Yeshua and his place in Jewish history that he has made his individual mark. Moshe Rabbeinu gave over Torah to Yeshua. And now Yeshua ben Nun is the new Moshe Rabbeinu for all practical purposes. So much so that in the Torah it speaks of the unique relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu in the sense of Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe Lemo. A pasuk that repeats itself tens and tens of times over. Sometimes it's Vayom Hashem al Moshe Lemo. Which means that Moshe Rabbeinu receives direct transmission and gives over the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as opposed to every other Navi. You don't see Vaydaber Hashem al Yeshayahu Lemor, Vaydaber Hashem al Yechezkel Lemor. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't speak to them. He showed them visions, and they had to interpret the visions. So the message was such and such, Ko Amar Hashem. That was the message by the other Navi. Ko Amar Hashem. Chazon. But never Amira. You have the Nevi'im giving over verbatim, word for word. The only exception is the pasuk in Sefer Yoshua, Vayoma Hashem el Yoshua Lemor. There's one pasuk in the Chumash about Aaron HaKohen, Vayaber Hashem el Aaron Lemor, and it's an exception. But Vayoma Hashem el Yoshua Lemor, which really tells you that the status of Yeshua is a notch under, but not far below, Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is indicated, you just jump to source number 3 and 4, from the Psukim of the Smicha, the first Smicha. Moshe Kibel Torah Misinei was Sarai, gave over to Yeshua. This is the Smicha. Vayom Hashem al Moshe, Dach lecha Yeshua bin Nun, Ish asher ruach bo, v'samachta et yadcha alav, and place your hands on him. So the concept of Smicha goes back to this phrase, where it's a physical placing of the hands on the person receiving the smicha. Afterwards, we use the word just with, you know, quotes. We call it smicha, but we don't call it the motions of putting hands on the head. But here, Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to place his hands on the head of Moshe Rabbeinu, on Yeshua. והמעלתה אותו לפני אלעזר הכהן ולפני כל העדה. And this is going to be a public, it's a public declaration. It's not something a private matter. Let all see this. וציווית אותו לעיניהם. And they should all be commanded that Yeshua is the next in line. There will be no fight for succession if the Moshe Rabbeinu departs of this world. ונתתה מהותך עליו, and you will transfer some of your glory upon him. למען ישמעו כל עדת בני ישראל. If Am Yisrael is going to pay attention to Yeshua, it's only because when they look at Yeshua, they're going to feel Moshe Rabbeinu. He is going to play the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Rashi tells us in the next line, מהותך, from your glory, ולא כל הותך, not all of your glory. He's not going to be like you, Moshe. נמצאנו למדים, which we can derive from here, פני משה כחמה, פני יהושע כלבנה. The face of Moshe is like the sun, and the face of Yeshua is like the moon. So the Rav said, most people interpret this Rashi, it's based on the Gemara, instead of Obakama, that the sun is obviously greater than the moon. So there's a concept of nitkatnu hadorot, that every subsequent generation from Sinai, there's a slow, gradual decline. And the decline from Moshe to Yeshua is going to be pronounced. People will be able to sense it. It's not going to be a slight marginal difference. It's going to be a demonstrative difference. Just as you don't make a mistake if it's the sun or the moon. That's not something that you can make an error. So people will know who is Moshe, who is Yeshua. But nevertheless, they're both celestial bodies. They're both celestial bodies. The Rav had a different understanding of Pnei Moshe Kechama, Pnei Yeshua Kelevana. So Moshe, the sun, is a celestial body that generates its own energy. It generates it by nuclear physics word called fusion. That's how it works. Moshe Rabbeinu generated Torah Shebaal Peh. That's who he was. He was a source. We call it Torah Moshe. Yeshua did not generate Chidushim. What does the moon do? It reflects the light of the sun. And here you have the definition, if you may, of what a Talmud Muvak is. It's someone who has the ability to absorb the sunshine of his Rebbe and to accurately reflect it on different levels and doses and frequencies. The moon does not shine the same way every night. Talmud has to have that ability to filter out that which the next generation can handle. Very similar to what Chazal said about the great student Talmud Muvak of Avraham Avinu. Was Eliezer. Who Damesek Eliezer? Chazal explained, Damesek Eliezer, Dole Umashke Mitorat Rabo La'achemim. He fetched the water from his Rebbe and was able to parcel it out to others. The ability to absorb totally from your Rebbe and to know what the next generation of students can handle, what's appropriate, in what language to give it over, in what circumstance to give it over. That's a Talmud Muvak. Pnei Moshe Kshemesh, Kechamah, Kshemesh, Pnei Yeshua, Kshemana. If we go back now to source number two. Source number two.
Excuse me. Isn't it a little bit confused to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was the source of...
When I say source, he received the Torah from Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu was the ultimate source. But Moshe Rabbeinu has the authority to begin the process of interpreting Torah. So much of Torah was left for human interpretation. And the proof is that this Torah Shebaal Peh. The whole notion of oral law is not just that Kadosh Baruch Hu, as if to say, left things out, and that is a tradition. If that would be the case, there'd never be differences of opinion in halakha. And the Rambam tells us in an introduction to the Derech HaMishnah, his Mishnah commentary, that if one were to suggest the differences of opinion in halakha is a product of forgetfulness, one Chacham remembered correctly and one got it wrong, says this is an insult to the Masorah, the tradition. It's not that. But Kadosh Baruch Hu deliberately left many issues open for human speculation so that we should be an active participant in the process of Kabbalat HaTorah. Now, in order that it shouldn't become wholesale balagan, we have an institution called the Sanhedrin, the Beit HaGadol, that's supposed to close the issues on a practical level. It doesn't mean you're right and you're wrong. It means this is what we're going to do. If 36 out of 71 say we're doing it this way, then you're obliged to do it this way, knowing that doing it the other way would also constitute a Torah point of view, but the Torah wanted unity. And unfortunately, this Sanhedrin ceased to continue to operate towards the end of the second Beit HaMikdash era, and that's why what remained was, in written form, machloket, disputes. And that's why today, Am Yisrael is fragmented. And that's why we daven three times a day for the return, Hashiru Shofteinu Kevod Shana, because we recognize that a fragmented Am Yisrael is galut, is exile, it's no good. We'd rather have, and we prefer, a united front of Klal Yisrael. And you have to have a Sanhedrin to do that. So Moshe Rabbeinu begins the process of Torah Shavuot Peh. He did not need the whole Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, Moshe Shakul Keneged Shivim. If 70 said one thing and he said the other, then Halacha Lo was Moshe Rabbeinu. He had overriding veto of the whole Sanhedrin. But he was part of that process. Moshe Uveit Dino. So yes, there was a tremendous amount of initiative, but Moshe Rabbeinu's part as well. And that continues. That's the concept of Chidushim. Concept of Chidushim Torah begins with Moshe Rabbeinu. No doubt. The Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us, number one, certain amount of things that were absolute. There is no discussion, no machloket. He gave us the rules at Sinai, how to expand on the words of the Torah, how to explain, and the Midot Torah and Leshet. And then, it's yours, it's your hands. And we are partners in Kabbalah Torah. This is what Torah is all about. And it's even, according to Rambam, the ABCs of Torah. Sometimes people were taught in first grade otherwise, and nobody adjusted those opinions. So they have to be clarified. I'm just trying to clarify. Yeah?
Was there a big difference in the style of Rabbi Lichtenstein and Rabbi Soloveitchik?
A big difference of what?
Was there a difference in style?
Style.
Did he teach mostly about style?
Yeah, they in terms of what the Rav did and what the Rav did, what they both did was the same thing. They gave shiurim. They gave shiurim gemara, essentially. But of course, all the Rishonim, primarily the Rambam was on the table, and other Rishonim. And yes, there's even somewhat, when you fine-tune, we're not going to do this now, in terms of the particular brisk methodology. When I say brisk, I mean the method of Torah developed by his grandfather, Rav Chaim, the Rav's grandfather. So there's two very fine Talmid Chachamim in the yeshiva. One is the Rav Lichtenstein's son, who's now one of the active Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. And the other is Rav Eli Krumbein. Both have written extensively about the unique style of Lamdanut Risk of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. So there are differences. That's when you really get down to the fine tuning of his mindset, his halakhic mindset. But in terms of what he did, so both of Rav and Rav Lichtenstein, they also appeared publicly in different forums, talking about philosophical hashkafa ideas, taking public stands here and there on issues. To a large degree, they had very similar, almost identical views of the state of Israel. Talmud Buvak. But there was a few things that demonstrated that Rav Lichtenstein firmly understood that even a Talmud Buvak can chart his or her own course of action. And let's just jump. The big one was his Aliyah. His Aliyah. Now, the Rav contemplated Aliyah in 1935. He came here to Eretz Yisrael for a short time between Pesach and Rosh Hashanah of 1935. He actually saw Rav Kook in his dying months. Rav Kook died in Gimel Elul of 1935. And the Rav was then the candidate for Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv. He was then 32 years old. On the slate of Agudas Yisrael, the Rav walked to Aguda before the war. And he got literally creamed in the elections against the Mizrahi candidate, Rav Amiel, who came from Antwerp. The Rav left the Eretz Yisrael, never came back. He was offered, 1959, after the passing of Rav Herzog, he was offered Chief Rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. Gave it a lot of thought, but turned it down. And there was also a possibility in the 70s, when they opened up the Koilun in Yerushalayim, the Gur Center, The Rav had given his word that he would come for a year or then a half a year. Bottom line was he didn't even do that. He never came back. But, and Shlomi took to his grave the reason, because he told 1,000 people 1,000 different things. But, and I do know, very much from personal experience, that the Rav invested in Talmidim and wanted to see a return on American soil. And therefore, not only for personal family reasons, he wasn't thrilled, putting it mildly, when the Lichtenstein family picked themselves up in 71 and came in Aliyah. And that Aliyah move was pending for 5 years, and it kept being postponed another year because the Rav was putting a lot of pressure on them. And finally, they just came. And I can tell you that 1978, December 78, when I went into the Rav to inform him that in that coming summer 79, we're going on Aliyah, and I was already a Rav in Astoria, Queens, and I was teaching in Yeshiva High School in Bronx, New Jersey, the Fritch School, and the Rav was far from happy to hear that news, far from happy. And we had intense, I would even say, negotiations on this. But I held my ground, and I told the Rav, I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for being a Talmud of the Rav and not a Chosid of the Rav. Because, you know, Chosid would never have challenged this. But the Rav wanted Talmidim to be independent makers. Similar to what Rav Amital Zichron the Rav used to say, I'm not interested in producing Amitalim. I don't want robots. I don't want robots. I'm not Chassidish Rebbe. I used to say that. Amitalim. The Rav wasn't interested that people should just blindly do what he said. He made his point, sometimes very emphatically, but go do what you think is right for yourself. That's what's your life. Adam ka ovei tzatzmal. I remember coming to Israel for a pilot trip for 2 weeks. One other thing, going up to the Gush. I went to see Rav Lichtenstein, and I said, Rebbe, you know, the Rav's putting on pressure. And rarely did I ever see Rav Aaron break out in a laugh. He says, you don't even know what pressure is. I said, no, some pressure. What do you tell me about pressure? And then if I told him the whole story and the various components of my conversation with the Rav, he said, well, you told him you're not a hustler. So that's it. It's already done deal. You know? And I remember Rav Aaron telling me then, says, when you come in Aliyah, nobody's going to roll out the red carpet. This is all before Nefesh B'Nefesh. We have the whole, you know, Traskadot at the airport. Nobody's going to roll out the red carpet. Nobody's going to applaud. You understand that you have to come. That's all. And I want to tell you that in spite of the fact that, aside from my parents being obviously role models, the guides of life, goes without saying, it's not a secret that the Rav was probably my principal role model in terms of any relationship between man and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I had other great role models. From Tal for me was a role model. It's not a secret that Shlomo Kalbach was a role model for me in some other areas. But Rav Lichtenstein was also a major, major role model for me. And in the specific area of him being able to pick himself up as the Talmud Muvhak of the Rav, his father-in-law, as the Rosh Kollel in YU, as the crown prince in Yeshiva University, being an institution that was tailor-made for him, of Torah Umada, everything about him, of being such a giant, towering Torah personality, and academically excelled and accomplished. All that, and having something to say to the American Jewish community, and being able to say it with conviction, having had all that, and putting it all behind him, at age 38, which means he's moving into his prime, for what? Do you know what a lunch foot was in 1971? It was two huts. Shnei trisim. It was a tris, a double caravan that was put together and made into a Beis Medrash. That's what it was. With a lot of vision. And I'll tell you that one of the clippings yesterday in the internet said he founded the one of Yased the Shivat HaRetzion. Not true. Not true. Shivat HaRetzion was founded by Hanan Porat, Zichron Lebracha, and some of his friends who were children of the Kfar Etzion tragedy of 1948. Kfar Etzion fell on Dalet Iyar the day before the state was established, Tavshin Chet. Many of the Yatomim who were sent as children out before, and their parents perished, their fathers perished defending the Gush Etzion, they came back in 67. We talk about the Hitnachluyot, the settlement. The first Hitnachalut after the Six-Day War is Kfar Etzion, September 67, 2 months after the war. And then in November 67, these fellows decide that they want a memorial to the Kedoshim who fell in Kfar Etzion. And what would be a better memorial than starting a yeshiva?
Yes.
And they set up yeshiva in Kfar Etzion.
Yes.
And only a year later, as Rav Hanan Parat, as according to Rav, understand, in order for this yeshiva to really take off, they need a personality. And they sought out and they found Rav Avital, who was then a Ram in Luchovot, in Yeshivat HaDalom. Young, dynamic, inspiring personality, warm. And they brought him. And the yeshiva started taking the turn for the up. People started hearing about the yeshiva. And Rav Avital had enough foresight to know that this yeshiva could be an outstanding, outstanding institution, but he can't do it alone. And when Rav Lichtenstein was coming for the summers, so he invited the summer before the Rav Lichtenstein to Shur and Yeshiva, and they fell in love with each other, those two. And they were so different. And it was a perfect shidduch. Where Rav Lichtenstein was the more stoic, Lithuanian, outwardly colder personality, I emphasize, outwardly, because when you got to know him, he was a very warm person. He just had to break the ice. And this intellectual guy. And Avital was more of a chassidish, a warm, smiley, personal type of person. Rav Lichtenstein was into the philosophy. Rav Avital also was Baal Machshava, but he was strong in Psak Halacha, in everyday issues. It just, and what happened was Rav Avital offered Rav Lichtenstein that he will step down as formal Rosh Hashiva and just give a shiur at the yeshiva. And Rav Lichtenstein would be the Rosh Hashiva, Yeshiva Har Etzion. And Rav Lichtenstein said, no, if I take the position, it's only to do it together with you, and we'll share the responsibility and title and everything that goes with it. This is what happened. And they worked together for 35 years. Really unbelievable. Really, really unbelievable. So in source number two, the Rambam tells us about Yeshua. He says, "Kol haMitzvot shenitlu Moshe b'Sinai, b'Ferushan nitlu." Moshe Rabbeinu received at Sinai the explanations of the mitzvah. Because when you read any mitzvah, you don't really know the details. Shene'emar, as it says, "Ve'etna lecha luchot ha'even v'Torah v'Mitzvah." This is a pasuk from the end of Parshat Mishpatim. What is Torah? Zu Torah shebetach, written. Mitzvah, zu pirusha. This is the explanation. V'tzivanu lasot haTorah al pi haMitzvah. We were commanded that you should perform the mitzvah according to the explanation, the traditional explanation, because you can perform the mitzvah differently as well. It says, "Kshartam ot al yadecha vayulot ot tefot ben enecha." It doesn't say there that the tefillin have to be square and black and particular parshiyot. You can do a different ot al yadcha ot tefot ben enecha. No, it's got to be this way. The mitzvah zu is called Kol haTorah kotva Moshe Rabbeinu kodem shiyamot b'chtav yado. Moshe Rabbeinu writes the entire Torah, puts it to writing before he dies. V'natat sefer l'kol shevet v'shevet. He writes 13 sefer Torah, 12 for each tribe. V'sefer echad natnua ba'aron le'ed, as a testimony. Sh'nemar l'koach at sefer Torah zeh v'samtem oto. Ba'mitzvah, shehi pirush ha'mitzvah Torah, the explanations, lo katva, did not write. El tzivaba. He gave it over. It doesn't mean order. It means commanded in the sense that he gave it over. L'sinim, l'Yeshua, u'lishar kol Yisrael. So here you now have a wide open. Who received the Torah Shebaal Peh from Moshe Rabbeinu? Basically everyone. Yes, there were the Sinim, the elders, the wise elders. There was Yeshua, he was part of it. And all of Klai Yisrael. Shenemar, et kol ha'davar Hashem anochi mitzaveh etchem, oto tishmoru lasot. That's why it's called the oral law. Even though this law was not written, it was oral. Moshe Rabbeinu taught it clearly to the grouping of the 70 skenim. The Elazar, Upinchas, the Yeshua, Shloshtam Kiblu Mimoshe. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah to all 70. So why didn't they say all 70 received? Yes, they studied Torah, but they weren't in charge with the mandate of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Who had that mandate? The top three. These are the three talmidim muvakim abayish rabbein, Pinchas, Yeshua, and Elazar. And within that three is a chairman. Uli Yeshua, shehu talmidon shel Moshe Rabbeinu, masar Torah shebaal peh, v'tzivahu aleha. V'chein Yeshua kol yemei chayav limed al peh, u'zkenim rabim kiblu me'Yeshua. What is the Rambam doing here? He's telling us how many people study Torah by Moshe Rabbeinu. Everybody. And the Skenim in particular. And further in particular, the inner three, Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua. And from that choice three came out one, Yeshua. Yeshua is the Talmud Muvhak of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why in Pirkei Avot it says, Moshe kibel Torah m'Sinai u'misar le'Yeshua. Yeshua then gives it over to the Skenim, anonymous. This is Talmud Muvhak. This Talmud Muvhak. So yes, I can mention many names of great Talmudim of the Rav, for example. And there were Talmudim Muvhakim of Liechtenstein. It's going to be very difficult now to put a finger on who might be the Talmud Muvhak of Rav Liechtenstein, but I have a candidate. It's going to try to take some time to play itself out in the years to come. Rav Yaakov Meitan, the current Rosh Hashiva also of Yeshivat Har Tzion. Absolutely, absolutely phenomenal person. But I said to Rav Liechtenstein, for sure. I want to go back to source number one in Pirkei Avot, the second Mishnah. Shimon HaTzadik Hayam Mishirei Knesset HaGdolah. The tail end of the period of Knesset HaGdolah was Shimon HaTzadik. Who Hayah Omer used to say three things. Al Shlosha Dvarim HaOlam Omeid. The world stands on three principles. HaTorah, HaAvodah, HaGdolut HaSadik. Every year, when the new boys came to the yeshiva, the fresh graduates from yeshiva high school, Rosh Hashanah Aleph, Rav Liechtenstein would assemble them on day one for a sicha. And I heard the sicha, not word for word, but at least in terms of the content, several times over, because I was a student at the yeshiva in 72, I heard it then. We moved to Eretz Yisrael, I worked for the yeshiva as the advisor to the foreign students for the first 2 years that I was there. So I heard it again in 79, heard it again in 1980. And I was told that this is something that he does regularly, annually. He begins with this Mishnah. And he justifies for the guys coming into Yeshivat Hesder what Hesder Yeshiva is all about. Hesder Yeshiva doesn't mean that now we're learning Torah, and now we're leaving the Beit Midrash and putting on army uniform and doing our military service. And this is out of the pale of our Avodat Hashem. No. No. Our time is divided into three brackets. Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chassadim. And it means, and remember what Liechtenstein is saying, it doesn't mean that these fellows study Torah, and these are involved in Avodat Hashem, and the third are involved in Gemilut Chassadim. It doesn't mean that. It means every individual has to take part in Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chassadim. What the Mishnah does not tell us is the percentages of time. How much time do you allocate for Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chassadim? So it's true, one person might divide it evenly enough, a third, a third, a third. And one person might have two-thirds Torah and the remaining third divided by Avodah and Gemilut Chassadim. And one person might have 90% Gemilut Chassadim and 5% Torah and 5% Avodah. That's nobody's business. That's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you divide it? Based on your talents, based on your abilities, based on your time, based on your interests, based on your motivations. But one thing is clear. Anybody involved in the trio is not guilty of Beetle Torah. If you're involved in Gemilut Chassadim, nobody can hold you responsible for Beetle Torah. You're wasting your time. You should be studying Torah. That's unacceptable. Just as nobody would say, Abdamik Shemon Esrei, that's Avodat Hashem. Wow, what a shame. Spent 5 minutes on Shemon Esrei, could have finished three sections of Tosfot. Anybody would say that? Would anybody say, I'm now shaking a lulav? Nah, forget about the lulav. I should be learning another Rambam. Nobody's going to say that. Because everybody understands that when you're in the, engaged in the performance of a mitzvah, it can't be little Torah. That's because the performance of the mitzvah is Torah. And what about sitting down and eating breakfast, lunch, and supper? Or doing any of the other bodily functions that we have to do? Is that little Torah? No. Kadosh Baruch Hu created you and me. And you have to do this, you have to do that. I call it in Hebrew, tzlachim chimiyim, essential activities. They're essential activities. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, v'chai v'hem, you shall live. So you have to do this to live, you have to do that to live. So you're not studying Torah right now. So you don't have to be like Rav Chaim from Risk, because Rav once told me that they were so engaged in a svara, in a piece of logic from Mashir, that the spoon of the soup went right into his beard. He missed. Okay, you don't have to be that engaged in Torah. You know, you can focus your spoon as you hit the mouth, not the beard. Said it. But the fact is that when we're not engaged in Torah study and are engaged in essential things, that's part of life. So you want to reduce this, that's okay. Everybody makes the cheshbon, the calculation, how much time, and so on. And so too with Gemilut Chasadim, for Halvayat HaMeg, for the Sameach HaTam VeKalah, all kinds of Gemilut Chasadim that override Talmud Torah. You take off from Talmud Torah. Nobody's going to call it Beetle Torah. That's not Beetle Torah. Beetle Torah is, you know, you're watching a sport event, or, and by the way, sometimes watching a sport event is also not Beetle Torah. And I give shiurim to the Air Force in my Miluim, to officers, non-religious officers in the Air Force. I always made sure I knew what was going on in Maccabi Tel Aviv. That's the way to start the shiur. I remember once my wife said, when I was watching a game, Maccabi Tel Aviv basketball, she said I should say Birkas HaTorah before the game. Because she knew that I'm not a fan of the Maccabi Tel Aviv. I always told my students in their Tamid at the yeshiva, I said, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Vicky Berkovich. I mean, I saw Will Chamberlain. I saw the Gedolim. But you have to know that, because you know they come in, you come in, you're a dati, and they're sitting there politely, because they train to be polite. But you feel there's a certain, and something's not right. You break the ice right away, no way to be a game. Huh? And then, of course, you watch the game, because you know you're going to talk about one particular play that's going to be the entree into what you're going to say about the Haggadah, the Kippur, the Tisha B'Av, whatever. No. You have a little talent, a little homiletical twist, how to do something. But you have them in the palm of the hands. That's very important. It's very important. Remember when I once was a guest speaker in Boston, in the Rough Space Manager office, right now, here with us anymore. And they had found out there in Boston, they found out that I wasn't exactly Boston Red Sox. So they gave me a token of appreciation for the shroom of the weekend at Kippah Yarmulke with the Boston Red Sox emblem. So I responded by saying that Mar says that he started shir with a milta de bichuta, with some type of a joke, and I can't think of a better joke than the Boston Red Sox. I don't know why they never invited me back. Aaron said that going to the army, there's no greater expression of Gimelut Chasadim today. That's what it's all about. And he said that even if you can defend the idea of not going to the army because you think that Talmud Torah is an overriding value, which Rav Lichtenstein thinks it isn't, by the way, but even if you think it is, you must view the service in the army within the context of Talmud Torah. So it's certainly not Bitul Torah. I just have a minute. I want to make a point that when the Rav would deliver a hesped, he would always try to focus on a personality, either a biblical personality or a personality of Chazal, sometimes a halachic concept, and then related to the person. One of the last, if not the last, article that the Rav's son-in-law, Professor Yitzhak Twersky, wrote in his life was also about the Rambam. He was a big Rambamist. And he begins the article as a type of dedication to Moiri V'chami, my Rebbe, my father-in-law, Yosef of Soloveitchik, HaRambam Shel Doreinu, the Rambam of our generation. Beautifully put. if the Rav was the Rambam of our generation, I think Rav Lichtenstein was probably the Rabban of our generation. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, so admired, adored, studied in depth the Rabban more than anything else. His Pirushim HaTorah, his philosophical writings, his way of life. Everything about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was Ramban. When he dealt with a Gemara that had a view of the Ramban, that was the core of the Shir. Not the Rambam, as you would have expected from a Brisker. It was Ramban. He dealt with philosophical issues, deep issues. It was the Ramban. And it's not an accident that when Rav Lichtenstein penned an article in English first and then translated to Hebrew, The Ideology of Yeshivat Hester. This was written in 1981. It was written as a programmatic essay because he had to make a point. I thought, and as you see from the article, he's engaged in tackling, challenging all the legitimate sources why Talmud Torah overrides going to the army. And he takes it apart, one source after the other. And it really shows that not going to the army because of Talmud Torah is a halakhically indefensible position. So and so. But he says, it's not that we love Torah less. We love Eretz Yisrael more. It's a very important point. We don't love Torah any less than anybody else that we love. We just love Eretz Yisrael more. But more than that, he ends the article. And I want to say why he wrote it. He didn't write it as a type of polemic against certain yeshivot where boys don't go to the army. He wrote it as a polemic against the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Karim Biafna. The flagship yeshiva of Yeshivat Hester, founded in 1954 with the Rosh Yeshiva's leadership of Goldwicht. Why? Because Rav Goldwicht, who himself was a great person and was a product of Ponovich, comes from the other side of the fence. Never left that other side of the fence. Always felt that Yeshivat Karim Biafna is a second-rate yeshiva. And somehow, successfully, the Rebbe quotes, conveyed that to his own Talmidim, giving them somewhat of an inferiority complex to the other Karedi yeshivas. And the boys in Karim Biafna felt it and didn't like it. And some actually asked Rav Lichtenstein, who they knew had a very different opinion on the subject, to give an articulated statement on the ideology of Hesder as l'chatchila and not b'di'evet. And that's what the article is all about. Obviously tackles the issue of going to the army, not going to the army. Listen to the last line. I'll read it in the original Hebrew, I'll translate. Be'omdo b'tma'ot al piskat har ha-zeitim. When he was standing with tears on the heights of har ha-zeitim, kishemareha agum, the sad seen in front of him. Kol ha-mikudash machavero, charev yoteh machavero. A quote from the Ramban's writings himself. Anything that's more sacred than the other becomes destroyed. The destruction is deeper than the others. Nistareya l'neged einav. Pans out in front of his whole field of vision. Ma haya ha-Ramban noten. What would the Ramban have given? La'amod perosh yeshivat hester. What Ramban would have given to be a Rosh Yeshiva as the yeshiva. Unbelievable identification, understanding of the Ramban, and who he saw himself standing in those shoes. And he thinks, I think the Ramban would have been very, very comfortable being a head of yeshiva hester. Because it matched everything the Ramban stood for. Of Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Israel, and Shilton Yehudi, and Jewish rule in Eretz Israel, and defending the country in Eretz Israel. Ramban had all that in his writings, all that. Ramban picks himself up in 1263, becomes an Aliyah, and there was no Nefesh B'Nefesh, and there was no El Al, non-stop flight from Barcelona to Tel Aviv, 4 hours, and you get a meal and 2 films. None of that. It took him 4 years to arrive to a Yerushalayim, and he couldn't find a minyan. That's what he came on Aliyah to. And he couldn't understand why the masses weren't following. But the Ramban left on. Stand as the head of the Shabbat Festival. I think this is a climactic ending to this article, but it's also a climactic statement of our regular about Berkelstein. And just look at the source page at the end. So 6, it says, Hillel Omer, and maybe Talmid Shalom, Rav Shalom, Rav Shalom, this was Ramban Berkelstein, as a peacemaker, even politically, as a peacemaker. Rebat Abriot, the Kovan the Torah, in every way possible, tried to create a scenario where people weren't pushed away, rejecting Torah. And the last phrase, in source number 8, where Chazal explained that when we repeat words of Torah from people, great people who departed, Siftotav Tovavot Bakever, their words are going to repeat themselves over and over again. And that becomes a responsibility of the Talmidim and the outer orbit of people. Who today, Baruch Hashem, it's not just written word, it's printed word, it's digitalized words, it's audios, it's videos. Baruch Hashem is here to stay forever and ever.